Welcome to this cast from Global Integration. In this series, we'll share our ideas on what is different about working in large, complex, matrix and virtual organisations. In this episode, I'll be talking to Kevin Hall, CEO of Global Integration and author of the book Speed Lead, about finding the right level of control in complex companies. What makes it difficult to find the right balance? How do we exercise control? And how can we create more autonomy and faster response by moving control closer to the action? Kevin, you wanted to talk about control in complex companies, but I'm wondering why.
Well, finding the right balance of control and autonomy is a challenge in all companies. But in large, complex organisations, there are some particular challenges. And for quite rational reasons, we've been going through a period where most organisations will have increased control to minimise financial and other risks. And control's like a ratchet. It's easy to increase, but hard to release again. So we need to have a mechanism in place for challenging this inexorable rise in central control, or organisations are going to become slower, more expensive to run, and less satisfying to work in.
So why do you think this is a particular challenge for complex companies?
Well, there are some additional challenges, really, over simpler organisations. Firstly, we're more likely to be working with strangers. So our colleagues may be in different locations, different organisations, different time zones, or different cultures. And all of these differences increase the possibility of misunderstandings. So is that email rude or just from someone in a more direct culture? Did that person fail to respond to my important request because they're uncooperative? Or maybe they're asleep in another time zone? It's rare in the kind of companies we work with that there's a major active lack of trust, but it's just that slight feeling of doubt. And when we have that, people feel the need to check more easily and to stay more involved. So trust is one of the big issues. Secondly, in complex organisations, particularly matrix organisations, we often have competing objectives and a slight misalignment of priorities. We rely on people from other parts of the organisation or even outside the organisation to deliver. And managers who are unused to getting things done without line authority can really feel out of control in this environment. When they feel out of control, they tend to look for ways to get it back, to get back into their comfort zones by increasing formal or informal control mechanisms.
What kind of control mechanisms are you actually talking about?
Well, your approach to control is embedded into your regular operating routines. So some are obvious, like your delegation of authority levels, your budgeting system, your regular reporting, etc. But it also includes your regular meetings, requests for information, the level of detail you routinely ask for, and what kind of issues you feel you need to get involved in personally. Now, complex organisations are very busy and information-rich places, and it's easy to become what I call an inadvertent micromanager.
What do you mean by an inadvertent micromanager?
Well, no one starts their career with the objective of being a micromanager, but it's surprisingly easy to become one from the best of intentions. So people who have high work standards, are hardworking, who love solving problems, are often most at risk because it's usually faster and easier for them to do things themselves. And this is a particular challenge for people who've come from a technical career path. They usually got promoted for being good at solving problems and for their expertise. When they become line managers, what could be more natural than to stay involved and to solve everyone's problem? Unfortunately, this can lead to over-control and not letting people solve their own problems, and these people can easily become a bottleneck.
But isn't control absolutely essential in business?
Yes, it is. But when managers talk about keeping a finger on the pulse of what's going on, I often say that you can take a pulse either with a light finger on the wrist or a firm grip of the neck. And when we exercise external control through a system or through escalation, we always add cost and delay. Someone else has to be involved and informed. Now, even if they make a better decision, and sometimes they don't, it will always be more expensive and slower. Also, people hate to feel controlled. It's unpopular and can lead to poor engagement and a passive attitude where people just pass it on up the line for decisions. Now, it's usually the level of central control that's the problem, rather than the total amount of control in the system. Traditional control mechanisms such as financial control systems are far too slow to be effective in the modern world. If I make an error today, my accounting system may not tell me for 6 weeks. Now, that's not control. When I worked in manufacturing during my corporate career, I was lucky enough to be involved in the introduction of Japanese quality techniques, where we moved from having quality inspection done at the end of the line into a system where individuals were given the information, the authority, the knowledge to be able to make immediate control decisions for themselves. Now, what happened is productivity went up, job satisfaction improved, quality improved, costs went down. So everybody won through a decentralization of control and authority. Now, during the same period, as far as we can tell, management control has been centralizing. So our expensive, supposedly talented managers are being given less autonomy and less ability to react. Now, I think only one of those directions can be right. And personally, I think that control is far too important to be exercised slowly and at the center. So the challenge is, how do we square this circle? How can we get real control without destroying autonomy and morale? And I think the first thing to recognize is that giving people autonomy doesn't mean there's no control. It just means they have it, not you. However, giving up our control as managers to allow it to be exercised more locally and more quickly requires that we do this in a managed way. We shouldn't just empower people until we're confident that they can do their jobs. We've been working with several clients to introduce a managed three-step process for doing this so we can build real local empowerment but in a controlled way. And it's got three phases. First of all, we build capability. Second, we work on mutual confidence. And third, we establish the right level of support for the way we're going to work together in the future. So first, at the capability stage, we focus on building the knowledge, skills and judgment that people need to do the job. And this is through traditional means like documentation, training, etc. Once this is in place, we need to build mutual confidence from the individual to take on the job in full and from the manager to be confident to let go. And the key skill here is non-directive coaching, to allow the manager to add value without giving the answer. And then the third stage is about recalibrating the level of support needed for this new, more capable person. So in this way, we make sure capability is in place before allowing autonomy and relaxing control. Now, of course, there are some things that managers will still need to control, and any organisation will have its formal processes and controls that all of us have to follow, particularly if you're in a regulated industry. And unfortunately, regulators are much more interested in control than people development and speed. However, all of us have the scope within our own area of operation to make a difference. Let me give you an example from my own experience. When I moved into manufacturing, I inherited a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week manufacturing operation from a relatively higher control manager. And what this meant was that evenings and weekends, I got many calls asking me for input. And I was also going through quality control training at the time. And I came to see these escalations as a signal of, if you like, management quality failure, in that my managers, by calling me, were saying, here's an issue that I don't have the capability to solve for myself. So I started making a note of the reasons, and good old Pareto, after a couple of weeks when I analysed it, I found that 80% of the calls were due to one cause. So I put some training in place, I updated the process documentation, and then when people called me about those issues, I wouldn't give them an answer, I'd just coach them, I'd ask them what we went through in the training, I'd put the emphasis on them, and increasingly people realised they could do this for themselves, and they stopped calling about those issues. And we did this systematically. We kept tracking the escalations, putting in place capability building, doing coaching. And then after about 6 months, people were not calling me at all. So then I had to have a conversation with people saying, look, I do want to be called if, for example, there's an accident in the factory. So I had to recalibrate, I had to set the control levels I needed, which were, of course, a lot lower than where I started. So that's what we advise our clients to do, to track their escalations as an indicator that a control norm has been breached, and to think about how can I equip people with the skills to be able to do this themselves next time. And by the way, this works upwards too. So when you go to escalate something to your boss, by all means, go and ask for information, but end the conversation by saying, look, I'm thinking if I had this information, this training, this delegation of authority, I could solve this myself next time and I wouldn't have to involve you. Now, sometimes your boss will say, well, I want to be involved, which is fine, but at least you've put in place a continuous improvement process to keep trying to develop your skills and capability.
So what would you advise managers to do first?
Well, I would start by looking at yourself. Look at your regular controls, your reporting, your operating mechanisms. Look at your own behaviours. Are you actually micromanaging from the best intentions? Secondly, discuss it with your colleagues. Where do they think is the right level of control in the team? Are the levels of delegation appropriate? Are you getting involved in the right kind of issues? Our experience is that teams are quite good at diagnosing whether the level of control is too much or too little and at coming up with practical examples of that. Thirdly, I think the idea of tracking escalations to see what kind of issues are beyond the capability of your people to solve for themselves is really helpful. And once you've got that information, focus on building capability, confidence and support so that next time they can solve the problem without escalating it to you. That way, everyone should win.
Thank you, Kevin. Sounds like this could be a win-win with faster control, more time for managers and more autonomy for individuals. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. These ideas come from our consulting work with over 300 major multinationals and from delivering over 100,000 participant days of training in over 40 countries. Remember, all of the value of these ideas come from their implementation. Just give a couple of them a try and see if they work for you. You can get more ideas from Kevin's book Speed Lead, Faster, Simpler Ways to Manage People, Projects and Teams in Complex Companies. Global Integration specialise in making complex organisations faster, less expensive to run and more satisfying to work in. You can find out more about us at globalintegration.com or our blog, lifeinamatrix.com.